Strap in tight, boys and girls, back with another edition of the best wrestling show, period. I'm Mike Mansouri alongside the original, the one and only Archer of Infamy in the world of wrestling and beyond, Mark Madden, Double M. I want to get right into it with you because there's been a big buzz that swept the wrestling world in the last week. And surprisingly enough, it has nothing to do with a wrestler, someone behind the scenes, someone in an executive capacity, Mark. I'm talking about Trashgate and the firing of SVP of Talent Relations, Mark Carano.
First off, my advice would be to strap on, not strap in, but I run with a different crowd, perhaps. Now, as far as what happened with the trash bag scenario, with Mark Carano being fired, let's cut right to the chase, Mike. Mark Carano was always going to be fired. His time had come and gone in WWE, and they used the trash bag story with Mickie James complaining on Twitter as a way for the company to babyface itself as they make another series of personnel cuts, even as they brought in over a quarter of $1 billion in revenue this quarter. And that's okay, that's their business, and they run it like one. But they're not making these cuts because they're losing money. They're making these cuts to keep their profit margin as high as they like. So let's get that established right away. Carano was out the door anyway.
That's a business. You said it right, Mark.
Go ahead.
You said it right. It's a business. Right. I want to hear yours because I do feel that Carano was on the way out as well. I think for different reasons, but let's get into it. I want to hear more of your stuff because you did have some pretty hot takes last night when we spoke.
Well, okay. I really like Mickie James as a performer. I've never met her. But the idea of sending somebody their belongings in a trash bag after they've been fired, that's not exactly like she got slapped across the face with a dead mackerel Monty Python style. It was not this blatant show of disrespect that she tried to make it out to be, and some other ex-WWE performers tried to make it out to be after Mickie James posted that original tweet. That wasn't meant as an insult. It was just how they did it. And I don't see how she interpreted it as just this grievous disrespect. She needs to get over herself, quite frankly. She went way overboard on that to try to make WWE the bad guy. And they're not the bad guy. They just got rid of a performer that they felt was no longer of use to them. And if she is of use to somebody else, well, she'll get a job somewhere else right quick. But if she doesn't, well, that is all that people need to know, to quote the great Baron von Raschke.
Well, I mean, look, I will say, Mark, that when you're fired, regardless of the circumstances and whatever the case may be, you know, I think you do take it as a slight when your shit shows up at your door in a garbage bag in a box. You
know, I just don't see it that way.
Mark, I think if you're fired in that position and you're seeing your shit arrive in a garbage bag, like, look, I guarantee it wasn't done with that sort of malintent, right? You know, to kind of just say, here's your shit, you're gone. But I think on the WWE side, you got to be smarter than that. You know what I mean? You live in an age where anything can be put on social media. As a company, when you're doing that, you got to be smarter than that. You have to be smarter than putting someone's stuff in a garbage bag, because look, if there's an empathetic side to you, you got to realize that after you lose your job, seeing your shit arrive on your doorstep in a box in a garbage bag isn't the best feeling in the world.
Well, you know, too bad. Life sucks and then you die. What should it have come in? A Louis Vuitton bag? I hope I pronounced that right.
You did,
actually. I mean, what's the right way to fire somebody where they're not going to get upset? Every time I've been fired, I've been pissed, and it had nothing to do with the trash bag. I just think it was grotesque overreaction. And when you say the WWE needs to, you know, think, they actually got what they wanted out of it. They got a way to get Mark Carano out the door and be baby faces at the same time.
Well, I mean, look, you turn a negative into a positive, right? That's the kind of the best thing that you can do in the whole situation. Look, I do agree that probably the writing was on the wall for Mark Carano. And I think for different reasons, Mark, if you kind of look at the moves that WWE has been putting out over the last couple of months in terms of their new executive leadership teams, there's clearly a new regime in-house at WWE. And it's just a matter of installing that new regime's, you know, chosen proponents, right? And components. Like, you know, you see it in sports all the time. If a new GM comes in, he's not keeping the old staff around. He's coming in and he's flipping things out. And even down to the talent as well. Like, you know, Pat says it all the time on the show, you know, if you're the GM and you're coming into a team and your starting quarterback isn't a guy that you drafted, that's more than likely not going to be your quarterback. You know, and I think you're seeing that now in WWE with, look, Nick Khan has been a very, very vocal frontman as president of WWE, and not obviously not upstage in the chairman, Vince, but Nick's been a pretty vocal part of the company, and you've been seeing a lot of new pieces being installed into WWE that have some sort of tie to Nick Khan and his previous employer, CAA, the Creative Artists Agency.
No, I have no problem with that. And as we talked about last week, I have no problem with, you know, getting rid of some of the talent. It's their company. They can do what they like, but I just want to make clear why they're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Which isn't because they're losing money. It's to maintain profit margin. By the way, Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, Lou Thesz Jr. And Carl Gotch Jr., they have jobs yet?
No,
These
think...
These two great performers, do they have jobs yet?
I think everyone...
Do they have jobs yet, Mike?
I think everyone hasn't... I think it's July 14th is the date that a lot of folks have put out as their 90-day no-compete expires.
Well, we'll see what happens on that date, won't we? If these great performers that have the chance to revolutionize the business, we'll see if they have jobs on that day. I am betting the vast majority do not.
I think they will get snatched up, Mark, because look, you know it just as well as I do. Any promotion loves to take the buzz of the spurned ex-WWE employees and kind of exploit that, you know, that narrative on their show. And then eventually, look, they really wind up doing nothing with the talent. You've seen it just as much as I have.
Oh, no question. I lived it. Although we did do a bit with some of that spurned talent. Not that they were spurned, but they came to us, got more money, got over. We got better. Then it all fell apart, which is probably a podcast in and of itself at a later date. But yeah, it's just business. It's nothing personal. And the trash bag thing was nothing personal. Like I said, should they have sent their stuff in Louis Vuitton? Am I pronouncing that right, by the way?
You are, by the way. Kudos to you. Kudos to you.
I have nothing to do with Louis Vuitton. Hey, Mike, I put my own belongings in a trash bag. That's where I'm at.
You know, Mark, I think my office belongings are still in WWE's New York office in boxes when they were shipped over from the Stanford office because, you know, COVID hit not too long before I relocated to the New York City office. So I hope my stuff is aging and growing mold pretty well in that New York City office.
Yeah, it's the same with me at my ESPN 1250 office. There's a lot of stuff that is probably, I hope it's long since thrown out because there might be something incriminating there. Not a body, nothing like that. Didn't WWE just get a sponsorship with a trash bag company? Didn't I see that somewhere? And the irony there is delicious, if so.
Mark, I mean, talk about timing, right? And look, for folks that don't know, when you line up a partnership, etc., they have what are called flight dates, right? Flight dates are basically when a campaign starts and when it ends. And as irony would play its evil hand here, WWE's beginning partnership with Hefty, this promotion that included Drew McIntyre and Sasha Banks, I believe it launched the same day, if not the day after, Trash Bag Gate. And, you know, just an example of, you know, timing kind of biting you in the ass and just making you look a little silly.
Yeah, and again, I just think it was way overblown. I think it's a lot of people who were upset they got fired, and not just in this wave, but past waves. They piled on after Mickie James complained. And again, Mickie James, a heck of a performer, but nothing personal was meant by sending her belongings in a trash bag.
No, but it's easy to sensationalize a negative and use it to further a narrative.
That's see it everywhere. My business. That's what we're doing right now.
That's what we're doing right now to some extent.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, look, like you said, no, you know, hopefully no harm, no foul. Mickie James, obviously a legend, an icon in the business, a bona fide Hall of Famer for sure. And look, I do think that she will land on her feet and wind up somewhere. I'd like to see her at AEW, Mark. I think a talent like Mickie James could do a hell of a lot for the younger women at AEW that don't have that veteran presence to work with. I mean, Mark, for those that, you know, Mickey came back to WWE initially with an NXT run because Mickey was used as a veteran and an established name and worker to come and help the younger women of the NXT locker room kind of elevate their game. And she did just that.
Well, in the men's division, I would disagree with you. At the men's division, their young performers don't need mentors in AEW. They need TV time.
Yes.
You know, they don't need Christian there. They don't need Big Show there. They don't need Samoa Joe there. But the women might be different because they have so few truly ready for TV performers. Mickie James is a bit overexposed, but she's only, I think, 41 years old. So, yeah, she might be a decent addition in the right role.
Yeah, Mickie could still go and look. you know, there's no live events right now. I know AEW ran one the Friday prior to WrestleMania, but realistically, you're not touring live events right now. That's somebody that you can have on hand, you know, to work with your talent before the shows to kind of help coach along. Like I said, you know, I know Dustin Rhodes is down there and he's doing that with the women's locker room. You know, adding somebody in like Mickey as well is pretty invaluable, if you ask me.
You know, AEW will never have a series of roster cuts. They just never will. WWE has them all the time. AEW won't ever, because Tony Khan wants to keep the family together. You know, those are all his friends. We've talked about that. He never wants anybody who works for him to know an unpleasant moment. And certainly being told you're no longer working for me is the most unpleasant of moments when it comes to employment. But they just have too many people there. And now we're talking about adding more people. You know what it reminds me of, Mike?
What's that?
WCW used to have way too many people. Way too many people. And when Hogan had creative control over the entire program, not just over what he did, but over the entire program, they would revise the script for the show and send pages out to the announcers during the show. Because Hogan would get there late and he would, you know, this don't work, brother. This don't work, brother. Revise, revise, revise. So to facilitate that, they would fly in the whole roster. Wow. Every show, wasting God knows how much money. But you would have basically... We had like, you know, 20, you know, Mexican wrestlers, you know, guys that came up from the promotions there, like, you know, Psychosis, La Parca, Hoovy, Ray, you know, Silver King, who eventually did get upgraded to Gold King, I'm told. And they would all be there and they'd all arrive at once. And it was quite the arrival, I got to tell you.
Jeez. So wait.
And so some of the boys look forward to them getting there, if you get my drift.
So Hogan. Yeah. So Hogan was booking.
No, he wasn't booking. He just had creative control over everything.
Wow.
So he would look at the script and say, doesn't work, doesn't work, doesn't work, because he wouldn't want anybody to get over to his level. I mean, that sounds crazy, but I saw it.
Right. And look, you know, you get he's the businessman and everything. I got to tell you something, too. I was kind of noticing, Mark, and we'll talk about this later on in the show, the specific program I'm about to reference. But in watching a lot of these documentaries that have been coming out lately, whether they're WWE produced or, you know, outside like the AEW stuff, like I watched the Piper doc on Sunday, you kind of get the sense that Hulk Hogan wasn't really the greatest guy, you know, just like, you know, just such as the character he portrayed on TV.
He wielded the control he had like an iron fist. No question about that. When the story goes that when he turned heel and joined the NWO, that they weren't sure he was going to do it till he did it.
Right.
That's legit. They weren't sure he was going to do it till he did it.
Sting was the backup plan, right?
No. I mean, when he went down the aisle, they weren't 100% positive.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what would have happened had he had a change of heart, but luckily he saw it was not only best for the company, but best for him. But, you know, unless I've been greatly misled, that's what the thought process was when he joined the NWO. You know, Hogan always treated me fine. But like I said, he wielded that control like an iron fist. I know he didn't get that I didn't get him. Like Eric didn't get that I didn't get Hogan either. Eric said to me, you know, this is the biggest figure in the history of wrestling. I go, yeah, Ric Flair's better. Because, well, I was the Flair guy growing up, you know? I wasn't a Hogan guy. So that's why I felt the way I did.
Yeah, I mean, look, and to clarify, my position obviously is talking about Hogan within the wrestling business, not the stupid shit that he did in his personal life outside that came to light. You know, let's separate those two. Those are obviously some scumbag moves that we don't need to go into. But Mark, you know, talking about, you know, your boy Tony Khan before, Tony was a pretty key part in a show that you and I both watched this weekend, and that was the Impact Rebellion pay-per-view that was headlined by Kenny Omega versus Rich Swann in a title-for-title match. Overall, Mark, I thought... Impact came out with a great show.
Yeah, it was a great show. And I give Scott D'Amore and Don Callis and their creative element a lot of credit, because they're doing a lot with not very much. There's not, you know, I mean, I like their talent, but it's not an overwhelming roster. It's not a deep roster. And Rebellion was a very good show. Tony Khan cut a cheesy promo wearing a cheesy outfit. He can't wait to get on camera. And sooner or later, no matter what he said and no matter what he's promised, he will be on AEW TV in an authority figure role. Oh, I have no doubt about that.
He's planting the seeds, Mark. I don't know if you've ever seen him. And for those of you that haven't, that are listening or watching to us right now, pop on over to the YouTube and take a search. Mark, do you remember the first signs of the evil Mr. McMahon character when Vince was going down to Lawler's promotion at the USWA with Savage and just cutting these amazing heel promos that would eventually, you know, become what we saw on TV with Mr. McMahon?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was just brilliant. And you're right, he was practicing. And I think that's what Tony's doing now. But you know, it's weird because Tony is like the heel, other promotions owner on Impact, right?
Right.
But yet on AEW TV, he doesn't like Kenny Omega. You know what I mean? Because Kenny works with Don Callis.
Yeah.
Who's an executive at Impact. It's all very, I don't want to say confusing, because I don't really pay that much attention to it within the context of where both promotions go. But I thought the best part of the show was they had two refs, Brian Hebner from Impact and Aubrey Edwards from AEW for the Swan Omega match. Excuse me. And when Brian Hebner took a ref bump, he was the ref in the ring. Aubrey came in. Kenny grabbed a chair. And, you know, drum roll, please. Aubrey took it away from him and wouldn't turn heel. And I'll tell you, I thought sure Aubrey was turning heel. You know why, Mike?
What's that?
She was wearing dark lipstick.
Yeah, you know, Mark, you said
that is the sure sign of a heel female referee wearing dark lipstick.
And what a great subtlety to pick up on, and a great subtle move by Aubrey to even do that. I got to meet her a couple times when she came over and did the Mae Young Classic. I believe it was the first one that she was a ref for. And you can clearly tell that she's got a great mind for the business. And, you know, she does great work on her podcast that she does on AEW's podcasting network. Just a great, great little subtlety that, you know, obviously left the mark on the audience because you picked up on it.
Well, Mike, I think Aubrey's the best ref out there right now. I really do. She reminds me very much of Mark Curtis in her in-ring style.
Mr. Brian Hildebrand.
And I can pay no higher compliment. I grew up with Mark Curtis,
yeah.
A.K.A. the late, great Brian C. Hildebrand, not 2 miles away from where I'm podcasting as we speak. So she's great, and I thought she did a great job, Brian Hebner. That was a very good match. We're going to talk about that. But one thing I want to touch on before we get to Omega versus Swan.
You got to talk about the opener.
Pardon me?
You got to talk about the opener, Mark. I know a match that I know that you were pretty heavily invested in.
Oh, right. Ace Austin, Josh Alexander, and TJP. And it was great. I think Ace Austin is a star. I think he's going to be one of the next very big things in wrestling. He's only 24. Great body, great look, great persona. You know, better promos every time he cuts them. Has a good grip on his character and how to work. Freakishly big legs. You know, which I don't know if that's a selling point, but, you know, he looks different is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Although I would ditch the purple hair if I were him. Josh Alexander is not far behind Austin in my estimation. He's great. He's that amateur style, you know, wears the headgear type semi-shooter.
Yeah.
And then you got TJP, who's a veteran who provided the glue. And that was a very, very good match. I liked it a great deal.
I just did the job to my chair over here, and I don't know if you saw that or not. It was a great match, Mark, and you're dead on accurate in your assessment of all three talents. I've, you know, obviously have not experienced too much of Impact kind of being in the WWE bubble for so long, so getting a chance to kind of catch up and really, you know, familiarize myself with some of these talents, Ace Austin blew me away. Blew me away. I don't know how long he's been in the business or how long he's been working, whatever the case may be, but holy shit, man, the guy's got it in the ring. TJP ring generaled that whole thing, and you know, like you said, he did his part and did it well. And Josh Alexander, I'm a firm believer in Josh Alexander as well. I think you're seeing this was a great night for Impact to establish these stars that are, you know, folks do not know yet, and they don't have a firm understanding and exposure to these great men and women that are on that roster, man. And that's where I hope that this relationship with AEW can kind of shine a little light on these guys and girls, because, man, they do have some talented folks at Impact.
No question. And I got sold on Ace Austin and Josh Alexander about 6 months ago. There was an indie show in Pittsburgh, International Wrestling Cartel, IWC, which is the big indie promotion here. And because of COVID, they did a show in a minor league baseball park. And they were only allowed to have like 200, 250 people there. And Ace Austin and Josh Alexander wrestled each other, and they burned the place down in front of a small crowd. you know, it looked desolate and empty, but that didn't concern them at all. They did their best, and they were brilliant. Brian Pillman Jr. wrestled in similar style in that show as well. Whenever guys give their all when they don't really need to, well, if they're established veterans, they're marks. If they're up-and-comers, that shows that they want it bad, and they got talent. And I was very impressed by those two right then and there. Now, another interesting thing that happened was the erstwhile Big Cass, now called W. Morrissey, debuted in Impact. Okay, first off, he is huge. I mean, you thought he was big then? He's even bigger now. He looks just larger than life, literally.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, and this is no knock on the guy, I'm glad to see him get another chance. It don't work without Enzo. It's like Tom showed up without Jerry. It doesn't make sense when they're apart. And that's no knock, but they were so established together. Morrissey by himself, it just didn't feel or look right, Mike.
No, he Morrissey came out as Eric Young's replacement. Eric suffered a torn ACL. I guess he wrestled his match with Eddie Edwards a couple weeks ago on Impact TV. So Morrissey was brought in, but you're right. You know, the Enzo and Cass package was over like you wouldn't believe, from NXT all the way to their call up to Raw. And you kind of saw when they tried to do the split, you know, before Cass injured his knee, that, you know, together they were a lot stronger than they were separately. Enzo did well for himself separately before he got in, you know, to whatever happened with him. But it's it makes me wonder, Mark, is this kind of a little tease? Is Enzo making his way to reunite the group at Impact?
I hope so, for the sake of the act, for the sake of both, because one is not as meaningful without the other. You need that intro.
Yeah.
You need that promo at the beginning. That's, I mean, that act was made by the promo. And a lot of good things trickled down from that, but it started with the match opening promo. That's what made Enzo and Cass, no question about that. A funny story about those two. When they debuted at NXT.
Yes.
And I was watching, you know, on streaming, which, you know, was kind of a well-kept secret. NXT was initially, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was sitting in the chair calling those shows.
I love that opening promo. You know, you can't teach that, right?
Yep.
So I stole it for the intro of my radio show. You know, my name is Mark Madden. I'm a super genius with a tested IQ of 166, and you can't teach that. Well, anyway, months later, I'm doing that intro for months. I don't anymore because I found something else to steal. But I'm doing that intro for months. So finally, Enzo and Cass show up on Raw. I got 10 or 12 calls that day and a bunch of tweets. Those guys stole your intro. And of course, I'm like, yeah, those sons of bitches. Who do they think they are?
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't want to put Morrissey down. I hope Enzo follows. I think that would be best for both.
Yeah, you got to give him a mouthpiece. The promo was never really a strong suit. Mark, I got to tell you, like, you know, I was part of the early days of NXT in the chair, and I remember we went over and we did NXT Takeover London at the SEC over there at Wembley, and they opened the show, if memory serves me correct. And when they went out there and cut that promo with the English, you know, that hot English wrestling crowd behind him, man, what a feeling in that building. I don't know if you've ever gotten to go overseas and work a couple shows with a hot European crowd, man. There is nothing like when a hot European crowd gets behind your gimmick and gets behind your promos.
I've been to England many times, but never for a wrestling show. But I'll tell you what, the support for any live event there, the concert crowds are better. The soccer crowds are better than our NFL crowds. It just is off the charts. So I'm absolutely certain it's the same for wrestling. One other match I want to talk about briefly was Matt Cardona against Brian Myers.
Ah, the former Zack Ryder, Curt Hawkins match.
Yeah, I just don't care. I mean, those guys are marginal. They'll always be marginal. If they can carve out a living in the business, more power to them. But one thing I didn't like, the finish involved Cardona landing clumsily and quote-unquote blowing out his knee.
Oh, right.
And the announcers compared it to Weidman in UFC breaking his leg the night before. That's not right. I mean, I know wrestling's not known for good taste, but taking a worked injury and comparing it to a legit broken leg. I don't like it. How about you?
Yeah, it's, you know, not exactly apples to apples when you're talking about a compound fracture of your tibia and fibula and a worked knee tweak or whatever the case may have been. You know, wrestling is the land of hyperbole, and I think this was one of those hyperboles, Mark, that missed the mark. But, you know, look, Hawkins and Ryder or Cardona and Myers, you know, to me, it's like what I said before, right? It's a promotion kind of playing off of the name and the story and the character equity that came, that two guys from WWE brought, and trying to capitalize it and exploit it as best they can. But I just don't know that folks are invested enough to really see this story continue.
Yeah, I'm not. Put it that way. So let's move on.
Yeah. One match, Mark, that really caught my attention. And look, I know you've been pretty critical of the guys and their characters. And look, I agree with the character work. It doesn't always work sometimes. But I really love the New Japan style tag match between the Good Brothers and the Finn Juice team of David Finlay and Juice Robinson.
Yeah, I loved it too. And first off, everybody thinks I hate on the Good Brothers. I think the Good Brothers are terrific. I think they're a very top level tag team. The only thing I've said bad about them is they're not funny. They try to do humor in all their promos. They're just not funny.
Get them some improv classes.
They are crack up the boys in the back funny. They are not talk on TV to the marks funny. So they need to just be what they are and not keep trying to be what they are not. But yeah, that was a brilliant match. And you're right. It had American style hype, like, you know, selling moves after the fact, like an offensive move that, you know, playing to the non-existent crowd, which I like, by the way. Even if the crowd's not there, do your act. But yeah, it was very tight, New Japan-style work. I liked it a great deal. I think everyone expected the Good Brothers to bring the title back to Impact, so I liked that Finlay and Robinson kept it. And I'll tell you what, I'm a big fan of Fitz Kidd, and I'll always call him Fitz Kidd. He is a chip off the old block. He is just a Finlay through and through. Love watching him. I thought he was the best performer of the four. And don't forget, those are four very good performers in that ring.
Yeah, definitely, man. I remember when David got signed to New Japan and was working, you know, was in the dojos as a young boy and even just starting to kind of cut his teeth. You know, Fit was obviously such a big part of behind the scenes at WWE. And anytime he got a chance to talk about his boy, like the pride that would beam off of Fit's face was really contagious. So I'd imagine last night he was watching his son go to work with Gallows Anderson and Juice Robinson and really just beaming with pride because, you know, I think there's something there to young David Finlay, and I'm curious to see what the future holds for him, because I imagine there's got to be a singles run coming for him very soon.
I would think so, and I think a run in North America I would think he'd go to WWE. I just think that's where he would see and his dad would see as the right move. But yeah, Fit is so proud of the kid. I ran into Fit for the first time in many years at Ric Flair's 70th birthday party, and we're sitting there talking. I said, "Hey, Fit, your kid's good."
Yeah.
And like, and Fit didn't talk him up big, but his look said it all.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad for David and especially for Dad that David's as good as he is, because that means the world to Fit, no question.
Yeah. Hey, talk about carrying on the family legacy. David is doing it justice. So, you know, many good things to come for him, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got.
Now let's get to the big match, because it was highly anticipated. They did a great build up to it. Title versus title, Rich Swann, the Impact champ, against Kenny Omega, the AEW champ. And I was not surprised, but pleased, that they had a clean finish and Kenny won both titles. My big fear was, like in the old days of Bockwinkel versus Flair or Backlund versus Race and those very infrequent title versus title matches of my boyhood, they would do the DQ or the double kana or some way to get out of it, but they did switch the Impact title to Kenny Omega. I don't know where they go from here with that, because each promotion needs its title. But on the night, I think it's definitely the right move.
Yeah, I think so too, Mark. And I think this sets somebody up in that Impact locker room to really make a big impact. If and when it's time for Kenny to drop that title, you have a moment to make somebody that could be the face of your company. So I do think it was the right move to put the title on Kenny. Now, this was a match I was following on social media, and then I had to go back and kind of watch it again. And early, Mark, I was seeing a lot of stuff on my Twitter with 50-50, sort of mixed results here in that folks were kind of claiming this match was a botch fest, other folks claiming that it was a classic. So, you know, obviously the Twitterverse had it piqued my interest a little bit. And going back and watching the match, man, like, look, as much as folks will say that we're critical of AEW, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, just to kind of, you know, get a reaction just for the sake of getting one, I'll be damned, Mark, if, you know, I feel comfortable saying that right now, Kenny Omega is in the top three, if not the top performer in all of wrestling right now.
In ring, he's number one, period. Yeah. Number one, period. In terms of persona, I'd still give it to Jericho and maybe a couple other guys, but his persona ties in well with, you know, the callous thing, the elite thing, the way he works. I'm a big fan of Kenny, always have been, and I think he's showing his versatility with the character he's become in reassembling the Elite and being a full-fledged heel. So mega props to Kennedy for the way he's Kenny for the way he's managed his persona. I thought he was great in this match. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I thought Kenny wrestled a 5-star plus match. His offense is tremendous.
It looks real.
Yeah, his heel mannerisms, everything about, I mean, those V triggers gave me a concussion, for heaven's sakes. That's how not stiff, I think they were safe, but how convincing they were.
Yeah.
Rich Swann wasn't ready for that match. Kenny wrestled a better than 5-star match. Rich Swann was about 3.5 stars.
And
it all adds up to maybe 4.5 total, which is a tribute to Kenny. But Rich Swann didn't look the part. He's dwarfed next to Kenny Omega.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. And what I'm really glad about, not to cut you off, is I'm glad Kenny didn't wrestle down. You know what I mean?
Like, me too.
You see folks sometimes where they can't really get their opponent to rise up to the occasion. They sort of wrestle down. And I'm glad that Kenny kind of continued on with the match to make the best with what he had. And, you know, not knocking Rich Swann, but like you said, Rich wasn't ready to meet the challenge of working with Kenny Omega at Rebellion.
Well, besides not looking the part, his offense was not good. His punches and his chops were just pathetic. I mean, he's in John Moxley territory there, except he's not John Moxley. And by the way, Moxley has gotten better. Before people accuse me of hating on Moxley, his punches have improved.
He's been listening to the show, he told me.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. Swann botched a couple spots where he went up top and lost his balance. And Kenny, as great as Kenny is, he saved the spot.
Yeah.
You wondered if it was botched. I had to watch it twice to see for sure if Swann botched it. So I'm not saying Swann stunk. He just wasn't to Omega level. He may yet be. I doubt it. But Kenny made that match, and he made it a very, very good match. Not an all-time classic, but maybe an all-time classic based on Kenny elevating someone who wasn't at his level, because that's a big part of being a wrestler at the level of Kenny Omega. Ric Flair did it all the time.
Yep.
Ric Flair would have matches in the parking lots of a car dealership with you know, the local talent and make it into a 4-star match. You know, that wasn't no parking lot net last night, but that's the equivalent of what Kenny Omega did. So hats off to Kenny. And one last thing about Rich Swann, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing the guy. Bro, don't slap your leg all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't like to spot that because I don't think it's a big deal. He did it so much and so loud it became a big deal.
I think a lot of folks, especially a lot of ex-WWE folks, Mark, are kind of playing up to that, right? Because you've heard the speculation on the internet that at WWE there's been an edict handed out that's basically banned and cast the leg slap aside. And I think you're kind of seeing that from a lot of ex-WWE folks as a kind of like a shot. But I think the shot is going against themselves as opposed to WWE because, like you said, it just makes your work look sloppy.
Well, if it's in their locker room, it's meant to go to their talent. That's not a rip on anybody. But believe me, and I know you've worked there, you know, WWE doesn't think about AEW every waking hour.
No.
Not everything they do, say, post on a sign has to do with AEW. They're just trying to do right by their locker room and what they want their performers to do, what they'd like them to adhere to.
Correct.
By the way, you mentioned that they have a chance to make somebody an impact by whoever goes after Kenny. That should be Ace Austin. And that's the first thing I thought last night when Ace Austin dropped the X Division title, that they're freeing him up to go after Kenny. And then if he beats Kenny for the Impact title, then he has a ready-made opponent in Josh Alexander, who beat him. But that said, I got to admit, as much as I like Ace Austin, is he ready? Rich Swann wasn't. I don't know if Ace Austin at 24 is ready. And if you put him in there with Kenny, you'd be taking an element of risk.
You would. And I think it's, this is, you know, we've talked about this before on the show, Mark. Outside of the Good Brothers, I think it'd be, you know, and, you know, I get real estate is very tight. And we talk about that all the time with, you know, with any sort of TV, but especially at AEW with the talent they have there. Would it hurt to bring a couple of these Impact guys over and get them a little experience on that AEW side and let them work with a couple names and let them really work on that national TV level to really blow themselves up and really get that experience in, man? Because, look, without live events and smaller shows to do right now, even though things are kind of popping up, you lose the ability to, you know, you lose the reps. You lose those reps.
It wouldn't hurt, but AEW, as we've talked about since the inception of this podcast, has very limited TV time. I mean, it took Jungle Boy how long to get a match that meant something on TV.
Yeah.
And when's he going to get it again?
I think it'd be a good idea to look at those shows, Dark and Elevation, and really see what you can do to really maximize, you know, their purpose, right? Like, I think that's a great, great place for talent to get reps and meaningful reps at that. And I think there's a way for AEW to make those shows meaningful because, as I've said before, man, there is a lot of value in the world of YouTube. And I think AEW is the right company to capitalize on it. And they have the means to do so. Like you said, they've got a lot of talent. I think it's just a matter of using that talent wisely and correctly.
Well, right now, there are two ancillary programs. What's it called? After Dark or
Dark and Dark Elevation are the two programs.
Yeah, they're indie shows on tape. That's all they are. I mean, they're squash matches with some of their talent squashing indie guys. I don't care.
Yeah.
Do better. Well, no, don't do better. Do whatever you want, but I'm not going to watch it.
Speaking of some companies, Mark, making a splash in the TV world, shout out to Court Bauer and the guys at and girls of MLW. They're making their debut on Vice TV this weekend as part of their new TV deal. Another company, like we talked about last week, another viable option for talent to go to and work and to really establish themselves. I think this is going to be huge. I think having another player in the game only makes things better.
It's another reminder for me, Mike, that no one will ever call me to announce on their program again.
No.
Not that I would say yes, but I get reminded about that all the time, every time somebody gets a TV deal. By the way, one thing we forgot before we move on, Mauro Ranallo did the main event of Swann and Omega on Impact.
Yes.
And it was good in that it had a big fight feel because of Mauro.
Yeah.
And I'll be blunt, Matt Stryker's not very good. So that was an upgrade. I mean, Matt Stryker would be a better color guy. They have two color guys on their team, him and D'Lo. D'Lo's not bad, but I would say that he's a Liverpool Football Club fan like myself. But Mauro gave it a big fight feel, but then it was cliche after cliche after pop culture reference after cliche after try too hard after cliche. Mamma Mia, I wanted to turn the sound down.
You're not a big Mamma Mia guy.
I just think, without going too deep into it, I think Mauro's incredibly overrated. He's very good, but incredibly overrated.
Ooh, that's a conversation for another time that we have to get into.
Exactly. Let's save it for another time.
But yeah, I do agree. Mauro did add that big fight feel, and that's what he did a lot at NXT. That was the allure that led to Mauro coming into NXT, is just that voice and how, you know, it's so familiar with fans of combat sports. And obviously, look, you know, what Mauro's able to add to those big combat sports presentations, we were looking to add that in the world of wrestling. I think it stuck. I thought Mauro did well while he was there, but you know, the thing with wrestling is that there's a lot more to sitting in that play-by-play chair than just calling a match. There's a lot more to it, and I mean, fuck, you're seeing it right now, Mark, on Monday Night Raw. You know, to pivot to our next point, that's called a transition, folks. Adnan Virk. So Adnan Virk is, I guess, last night was week three into his new journey as of Raw's lead announcer, taking over for Tom Phillips. And the overwhelming response on Twitter, Mark, was not very good. Adnan was trending last night on Twitter, and not for good reasons.
Well, one last thing about Mauro. Mauro's really good, but you can be really good and overrated, too.
Yeah.
And that's where I stand on Mauro. I think he's better at real sports than at wrestling. And let's leave it at that. Now, Adnan Virk, I feel bad for the guy because he's announcing a product that isn't very good. Raw isn't very good right now.
No,
he's become the scapegoat for that.
Market's damn near unwatchable.
God forbid they would say that Raw's not very good, so he's become the scapegoat. That said, and I didn't always do this, mea culpa, an announcer has to rise above a bad product and make it better. And I don't think Adnan Virk is doing that because I don't think he has the experience at wrestling to know how to do that. You know who does know how to do that? Corey Graves.
Oh, yeah.
Corey Graves. The worse Raw is, the better Corey Graves is.
Yeah, because, Mark, you saw, I mean, obviously I know from having sat in that chair and obviously knowing Graves as well as I do, I saw him last night shift from analyst, color guy, to even doing a little bit of play-by-play. It's not an easy thing. A guy that you and I both know, Justin Labar, had a pretty accurate summation of, you know, Adnan and where he was last night. And that, look, that chair is not easy to sit in. I think Justin said it's like sending a text and jaywalking through four lanes of traffic in order to really lead and, you know, lead announce Monday Night Raw. And it's hard to do that when you don't have an understanding of the business. And I think you're going to see that with anybody, Mark. You can put, you know, you can put Joe Buck, you can put, you know, any great sports lead in there, and the outcome would still be the same, because regardless, if you can do the mechanics, that's fine. But you have to know wrestling to sit in that chair and do it. You just absolutely have to, because you can't fake it. We've talked about it all the time, how a disingenuous performance can be sniffed out by a wrestling audience very quickly.
First off, I'd love to see Joe Buck do it.
I would too.
But the real Joe Buck, who I've met, who I've had on my show. Did you see the TV series Brockmire?
Yes.
With Hank Azaria.
Yeah.
That's the real Joe Buck. Joe Buck on that show is the real Joe Buck. I love Joe Buck. Can't say enough good about him. He's real close friends with a close friend of mine, Mark Bulger, the former St. Louis Rams quarterback who hails from here in Pittsburgh. And I've gotten to know Joe a little bit through, and he's just the greatest guy. And I'd love to see him do wrestling, like I said, as the real Joe Buck. But the reality is, with Adnan Virk, he's not nearly as bad as the fans said on Twitter last night. And Raw's not nearly as good as WWE fans like to pretend it is right now. That is the worst TV program for wrestling right now. Raw, by far.
It's hard.
Impact's better. AEW's better. SmackDown's better. Heck, Ring of Honor's better. It's just so bad. They're just, I don't know how to describe it, because I like some elements, like the big man stuff they're doing with Braun. And
Drew and Bobby.
Right, exactly. Lashley and Drew. But most of it just doesn't add up. There's a lot of coffee pot stuff. Stuff randomly thrown together. It's just a bad wrestling program.
Yeah, I think outside of the segment, you know, everything surrounding the WWE Championship, and I really like what they're doing right now with Riddle and Randy Orton. I think there's a great story there that's only going to continue to elevate Riddle, a guy who I think is going to be in the championship picture sooner rather than later. But there's a lot more misses than there are hits, Mark. And when you have that many misses over the course of 3 hours, I mean, look, let's face it, we're overcritical of everything that we see. And I mean, at wrestling fans as a whole, and I'm lumping us in there, because we always want the product to be better. And in order to tell stories, sometimes you kind of have to have a dip. You have to have a lull in your story in order to kind of ramp back up. But the problem is that we're not seeing the ramp back up. More often than not, we're getting the dip on Raw, and the dip just stays. And it doesn't come back up to the point where, look, you've heard people be critical about WWE in the past in terms of doing this. The lull gets so bad, Mark, that they just abandon a storyline altogether.
Well, first off, anything Randy Orton does is great.
Yep.
Okay, I think of him as self-contained. He's not on Raw. He's just Randy Orton.
Raw just happens to have Randy on it.
Exactly. You know what they tend to do? More so on Raw than SmackDown, and I don't know why, Mike. When something's not working on Raw, they tend to try to ram it down our throats anyway.
Right.
For example, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, not working. Nobody cares. Lana, nobody cares. Who's Lana's tag team partner?
Naomi.
The fact that I forgot her indicates that nobody cares. And we keep seeing them every week in long segments. And the bad part is it's dragging like Asuka down with them.
Yeah.
See, that's one thing. When something's not working and then you intertwine it with people who are over, either the bad goes up or the good goes down. And more often, the good goes down.
Well, it's the good getting pulled down. It's not even going down. It's getting pulled down. Yeah, I agree, Mark. And look, I've been there, right? I obviously know. It's not easy to fill 3 hours worth of content every week. you know, I don't know that I would be able to do it efficiently or well, for that matter. Maybe. Who knows? But, you know.
Of course you could. Of course you could. Who are we kidding?
But, you know, to your point, let's, like, it's not hard to tell a good story. And I've said this a bunch of times on here. I think they're just kind of trying to tell the narratives they want to tell with characters that don't fit into these stories that they're trying to tell. They're very much just shoving a square peg into a round hole in the hopes that it's going to fit. And if it's not going to fit, they're just going to take a fucking hammer and mash it in until it does fit into what they want. And what happens is you wind up splintering that square peg until it becomes shit.
Well, here's something, Mike. I want to hear your opinion on this. And I'm isolating on one person, and I'm not picking on her, but just for example's sake. I've always had the theory that when something dumb happens or bad happens or embarrassing happens, you can't unsee it, okay? Nia Jax, when she screamed, what was it, oh, my hole?
My hole.
She became a comedy clown forever. And now whenever I see her try to do something else, I think of her as the my hole girl. She can't undo that. She can't unsee that. And I think that applies to more than a few performers on wrestling TV these days.
I think what you're seeing, Mark, and again, I don't know. I'm not there. I'm just kind of speaking off of assumption here, and I know what happens when you assume. But I think what you're seeing here, Mark, is a lot of talent being frustrated with the creative positions that they're in. And we'll call it going into business for themselves, right? Like you joke about, you know, Gallows, you know, we not joke, but we talk about Gallows and Anderson and how their stuff doesn't resonate because it seems like all they're trying to do is pop the boys. I think that's what you're seeing a lot on Raw. My Hole and all the other shit that you may be seeing after that is that a lot of the times I think you're just seeing the talent just kind of act out, if you will, out of frustration.
No question. There's no question about that. Although I think that my whole thing was scripted, don't you?
I don't know. To me, it's just I've seen Mark a few times where, you know, we'll call him a happy accident will happen, and then it'll just kind of get regurgitated and implemented into the storyline.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out the New York Islanders for stealing that one, by the way, years ago. But I think that's what you're seeing, Mark. And, you know, watching last night, this kind of stuck out to me, and I found it very strange. And we talked about this going into WrestleMania on the other side of it. Where have AJ Styles and Omos been?
I don't know, because Omos had that great debut, and now he's disappeared.
Yeah, you crown.
I assume he's going to come back and kill somebody, but they're the tag champs. I mean, shouldn't they be on TV? And AJ's like a Randy Orton-esque guy.
Yes.
Whatever he's in is never going to be too bad.
No, and
you need guys like him on your TV. You know who they're overdosing me on?
Who's this?
Miz. They're overdosing me on Miz because they're trying to push that goofy reality show. What is it? Miz and Mrs.
Miz and Mrs.
or whatever the friggin' is, which I would not watch one episode of, even if they had my family at gunpoint. But but we're seeing too much of him because of that, because they're indulging the agenda of that reality show. Miz is great. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He's a consistent entertainer, but he's also not the guy you want to saturate with.
No, I agree with that. And like you said, you know, that's obviously you're seeing it because here you are in the throes of a new season of Miz and Mrs. And obviously it's airing on USA, the network you happen to air on. So what better promotion for them, you know, to kind of get that crossover audience into their reality show than by giving you a lot of Miz. I tell you what, Mark, for anyone that hasn't checked it out yet, pop over to Peacock and check out the WWE 24 that was done on the Miz to get a little insight on the guy, because that is a guy that has been trashed on the internet incessantly because of his background, where he came from, his integration in the business and everything else in between. I think everyone watching that will grow a greater appreciation for all that that man has dedicated to the business and all that he's done. John Cena put out a tweet in promotion of the documentary or over the weekend, and I think John said it right, man. You really will understand the passion and the love that that man has for the business if you get a chance to watch that documentary. I mean, look, those WWE 24s are always great. I've loved all the documentaries since they started doing them, and I think this is really good insight into a guy that really has a bad rap in the business.
Well, I'm a big fan of The Miz. I just don't want anyone, unless it's, you know, Flair or Cena or, you know, Heyman, to saturate my programming.
No, but like you said, Mark, it's a commercial. Miz's segments now on the show more or less become a commercial for Miz and Mrs.
And anytime a wrestling program starts promoting something outside what it has immediate interest in. And I guess they do have immediate interest in those reality shows they're WWE produced, but I just think that's a very slippery slope.
I think you might.
I'm a Miz guy, but.
Yeah, but I think, Mark, you're going to start seeing that, you know, on AEW sooner or later with, you know, the Cody Rhodes and Brandy reality show that's coming soon that's going to kind of chronicle their journey into parenthood. I think you're going to see the same thing on AEW TV. Maybe I'm wrong.
Right, because nobody's ever had a kid before. We need to know what's happening there. No, and I love those two.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Cody a little bit. I mean, they're great people, and it's just, I don't care. I don't care you're having a kid. I don't care about any of this. I mean, God bless you. I love you. I hope your kid is happy, healthy, successful, and grows up to be a better human being than me. I just don't need to see every nuance of it on TV. But then again, I don't have to. That's why they make the clicker.
Hey, amen, brother. Amen to that. I'll transition again, Mark, into speaking of documentaries. A&E, and WWE entered into a partnership, and they started cranking out and revitalizing the old A&E biography series. So far, they've pumped out Stone Cold Steve Austin, Roddy Piper aired over the weekend, and next weekend is one that I'm definitely looking forward to, the Macho Man Randy Savage biography. Savage was always one of my favorites growing up. Mark, have you seen these, and what do you think so far of the journey into the relaunch of biography and getting a chance to look at the stories of some of these legends in the game?
Well, I have not yet. First off, I know most of the stories because, you know, like in Roddy's case, I knew Roddy.
Yeah.
You know, I witnessed his WCW run anyway. And I got to be honest, and I think I mentioned this before, I am really down on the documentaries because I am really pissed.
You're still pissed.
Really pissed.
Yeah.
That the Dark Side of the Ring did not interview me for the Pillman documentary.
I think that's debuting on May 6th. Sorry, don't mean to
run. I talked to Pillman like every day for 5 or 6 years. You know, longer than that, come to think of it, right up until Brian passed. And I can't believe they think they can tell that story as effectively as it should be without involving me. I mean, not that I would make it and not that my absence will break it, but you know what they're going to do? Have I told the Super Bowl story on this show yet?
No, but I think it's about time you did.
Okay, I've told it a million times. You know what they'll do? They'll have somebody else tell the story without my name in it. That's what they'll do. Okay, here's the story. Super Bowl 30, Steelers and Cowboys. I'm working for the Post-Gazette, Pittsburgh paper, covering the game. I'm in Tempe, Arizona. The week before, I get a call from Pillman, who at the time was a free agent. And he was doing all that hype stuff, like trying to get as much notice as he could to try to pump up his dollars, right?
Sure.
Calls me up at 3 a.m, of course, when he always called. I got an idea. And the minute he said that, I'm like, oh boy. Because I always was like, oh boy. Because he was like Wile E. Coyote minus the pulleys and anvils.
Just a lot of Acme products.
Although this was a good idea. Actually, most of my ideas were pretty good. They were just insane. He goes, you're covering that Super Bowl, right? And I go, yeah. Well, here's what you do. You give me your press pass. And I run onto the field and chain myself to the goalpost. Can you imagine the publicity that'll get when I'm chained to the goalpost in the middle of the Super Bowl? He goes, that'll be unbelievable. It'll be on every network. It'll be on live national TV, the biggest audience that anything gets this year. That's a great idea. And I go, Brian, you're right. That's a great idea. Here's the problems. One, if I gave you the pass, I couldn't cover the game.
Yep.
Two, if I gave you the pass, I would be fired from my job because it's pretty easy to draw a connection between me and you. Three, I would never work in my profession again. Ever. No. So there's like about a 30-second pause, a pregnant pause. And Brian goes, look, I can't be the only one making sacrifices.
Sacrifice for the good of the team, Double M. Come on, man.
Right. Well, let me tell you, I left the Post-Gazette a year later. Had I known where it was going, I would have given him the friggin' press pass.
My God, man.
No doubt about that. But the thing is, this wasn't like just this cockamamie scheme. You know, he was real good friends with Kim Wood because he played for the Bengals briefly, did Brian.
Yeah.
And Kim Wood was the Bengals strength coach. And he was an even bigger co-conspirator with Brian than me. And they looked into getting him into that game after I, you know, ixnayed my participation. That was a serious plan. For sure it was.
Hey.
Like after I told him, and Brian understood
yeah.
that I couldn't give him the pass, right? But I got a few calls and messages. Hey, what we talked about, I may see you down there anyway. May need to stay in your room to lay low. I mean, they looked into it, and it would have been great, right? I wish he would have done it.
Hey, the guy was a mastermind. I mean, look, this is the same guy that convinced Eric Bischoff to legitimately let him out of his contract because he thought Brian had worked Bischoff into thinking he had this whole scheme to come, you know, to make him into this absolute lunatic and to really generate buzz for WCW. But all Pillman did was got Bischoff to let him go so he can go do his own shit.
Yeah, but that's how Brian was.
Yeah.
In retrospect, it's amazing he didn't get the press pass from me.
Yeah.
He was a master of reading the room, too. Remember his promo where he debuted in ECW?
Oh, yeah.
Here in the darkness with the cane.
Yeah.
With the horse's head at the end of it?
Yep.
Well, if you watch that promo, at the beginning, he's doing like a kind of play to the crowd at ECW promo. But then he turns on them viciously. He starts to smart marks. You're nothing but smart marks. And I talked to him afterward, and he goes, yeah, that wasn't going too fucking good. He goes, so I figured I better really go heel on him. I just turned it around. I hope it worked. And I'm like, yeah, it really did work. No one was better at reading the room than Brian.
The stuff he was doing in ECW was great, Mark. I mean, it really blurred the line between what was a work and what was a shoot.
Well, Brian blurred the line between what was the work and what was a shoot.
You couldn't tell You couldn't tell where the man ended and the character began. They were almost one and the same from what I've heard.
Like the stuff where he grabbed Bobby around the neck at ringside for Clash of Champions and Bobby said, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
That was totally legit. Bobby had no idea. And Bobby did have a bad neck too. Bobby was hot.
Yeah. Yeah. You could hear it. What the fuck are you doing?
Come back. Yeah, it was, but it had the desired effect. Brian wasn't above using you for a prop if he felt it would further his cause.
Hey, and more often than not, he succeeded in furthering the cause.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I never had more fun than I had knowing Brian Pillman. There's no question about that. Every time the phone rings at 3 in the morning, which doesn't happen often, thank God, but I think it's him because that's when he called, 2 or 3 in the morning. When I was like, and I was broke all the time back then, like, you know, I lived at home a lot.
Yeah.
If my mother answered, he'd talk to her for an hour.
He's bouncing his creative off your mom.
Oh, no kidding. He absolutely would. And like to show what kind of guy he was, I was hit hard when Brian went. My mother was hit just as hard.
Yeah.
Just as hard. She couldn't believe Brian was gone.
Yeah, very, very sad and unexpected, but, you know, going out in a blaze, just like he lived, right?
Oh, no question. But I think if he was around today, he'd run the business. He'd run one of the companies.
He
was that smart and that innovative. He was just unbelievable. Another quick Brian story. When he had the injury, the Humvee accident.
Yes.
He was recovering, but his wife, Melanie, was a former Penthouse Pet of the Year.
Ah.
Okay? So there's a strip club in Pittsburgh called the Philly Corral. So during his injury, Melanie did a feature appearance at the Philly Corral, and Brian came with her and was selling his gimmicks at a table at the strip club. So naturally, I went. How could you not go, right?
Yeah, you were there for the gimmicks, not the strip club.
Well, a little of both. And it was funny because, you know, I'm sitting there with Brian at the Philly Corral, which, by the way, is like 45 minutes away from Pittsburgh. It's not exactly down the street. And so Brian's selling his gimmicks, and we're having a cocktail or two. And apropos of nothing, with Melody on stage, Brian leans close to me and goes, New Year's Eve with the Pillmans.
Jesus. What gimmick did you buy? Did you buy a t-shirt?
The only thing I had of Brian's gimmicks were I had a Rogue Four Horsemen t-shirt, and I gave it to little Brian, Brian Jr. about a few months ago when he was in town for an indie show.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, Brian should have that. I'm so proud of Brian Jr. I wish we kept in closer touch. We DM back and forth, but I'm real proud of him, and I hope he does everything he wants to do because he's doing it for his dad. I couldn't be happier with that kid and the work ethic he has and the path he's pursued.
He's a spitting image. He's a spitting image of Brian. He is a spitting image of Brian.
Yeah, and he's going to be great. He's got started a little late. He's 27 now, which you wouldn't think because he's been in it for such a short time. But Brian Jr. is going to be great. Here's a story, Mike. People think I'm a jerk, right?
Right.
I am a nice guy. Here's further proof.
Let's hear it.
On my radio show a couple years ago, I had Sasha Banks on live, on site. We were doing a remote, okay? And I think Sasha's terrific. And when I worked with Eddie Guerrero in WCW,
sure,
we would do play-by-play broadcasts at sold-out house shows on the internet. You know, we would have, you know, sometimes, you know, like a one-camera video, sometimes just do radio style, play-by-play. But we would do these live shows from sold-out house shows. So, and it would be me and Lee Marshall, sometimes me in Okerlund, sometimes me and Chad Damiani, Deli Boy, but it was always me. So we're in L.A., and Eddie Guerrero was in a tag match. In L.A., of course, site of When Worlds Collide, the AAA pay-per-view with Eddie and Art Barr against, who was it? It was Octagon and Pentagon, or I hate to forget those names, but I'm an old man, and that was a long time ago. But anyway, that's this huge match, hair versus mask, right?
Yeah.
And Eddie came to the ring for that WCW show wearing a Los Gringos Locos t-shirt, which was him and Art.
Yeah.
Okay? And from the ring, he throws it to me, because I'm at ringside. He throws it to me. And afterwards, Eddie wrestled his typical great match. And afterward, I gave the shirt back to Eddie. He goes, no, that's for you. He goes, you knew Art. He goes, you were a big supporter. You talked about how good our tag team was. I want you to have it. And that was a really touching moment for me, because I met Art a couple times, but I really liked that tag team. And that was when I wrote for the Dirt Sheets for the Torch.
Yep.
And I just thought those guys, you know, Love Machine and Eddie, they were just tremendous, right?
Yep.
So I kept that shirt for years. And I know Sasha patterned her, you know, a lot of her gear and her style. And Eddie was a big influence on her.
Big influence on Sasha Banks. Big.
Eddie was her favorite wrestler. So on air, I gave the shirt to Sasha and explained the story, and we both started crying. So I'm a nice guy, Mike. No matter what anybody says, I am a nice guy.
You're a sweetheart, Double M. And the team.
And I'm sure Sasha takes good care of that shirt because it meant an awful lot to me, as did Eddie.
Yeah, I'm sure she's appreciative that John Madden gave her Eddie Guerrero's t-shirt.
yeah, that's probably what she thinks. but it's funny because, you know, that's funny too, Mike, because a lot of the younger people in wrestling right now, and I don't fault them for this. I was on TV for a year, but they have no idea I was on TV for WCW. No idea.
You think that speaks more, Mark, to where WCW was at that point by the time you transitioned?
Oh, no, I just don't think young people need to know that I was on TV, young wrestlers, even young announcers. I think that they need to know who Ric Flair was. I think they need to know who Bobby Heenan was. I think they need to know who Jim Ross was and still is, but they don't need to know who I am. I was such a blip on the radar screen. That said, one of the coolest things that happened after I got out of wrestling, I was out for a couple years. And what year did Flair retire?
That was
WWE retirement.
2008, WrestleMania 24 in Orlando, 2008.
I think it was them, but I'm not totally sure, right?
Yeah.
I think it was 08. I went on the house show swing with Rick in Pittsburgh. You would fly into Pittsburgh, do Pittsburgh, Erie, Johnstown, Wheeling. So I took days off and I drove with Rick and Hunter with Triple H, which was great. So I would go backstage and everybody was real nice. But John Cena came over and I introduced myself to John Cena and I go, hey, I used to be on TV for WCW. And he goes, oh, I know who you are. I was so happy with that. Like the biggest current star remembered me. You know what I mean? Probably not in a good light, but he didn't say that. So I am forever grateful and thrilled that John Cena remembered me.
John's the best, and he's one of those guys that has a firm appreciation for the history of the business. And I always kind of approached it, Mark, even though obviously my responsibilities within wrestling were a lot different than being an in-ring performer, but I've always been a firm believer that in order to know where you're going, you have to know where you've been. And you know, I grew up a fan, but, you know, I didn't grow up like a monster fan to where I was obsessed with everything. So, you know, as I was kind of getting my education in the business and being around all the folks that I was fortunate to be around, I really made sure to go back and to study and to do my part and to really have an understanding, because in order for me to learn, I had to bring something to the conversation that, you know, to me, like, I didn't want to look dumb. You know what I mean? And granted, most of the time, you know, folks, especially when you're young, you know, you keep your mouth shut and you listen a lot more than you talk. And that's how I did all my research, was just asking these guys questions whenever I had the opportunity to, or I'd go back and I would watch stuff, because, you know, the WWE library is immense. And YouTube obviously being a big thing, but I'm a firm believer, man, that you kind of have to know the past in order to know where you are in the present and where you're going to go in the future.
Amen to that, Mike. And the most I learned in wrestling was just sitting around and listening.
Yeah.
Okay. I listened when Dusty talked. I listened when Terry Funk talked. I listened when Rick talked, although Rick was mostly ordering another drink. I listened when Roddy talked. One of the most knowledgeable people ever about wrestling, Scott Hall. I always listened when Scott talked. I mean, some of these guys I listened to excess. Like, when Dusty talked, I rarely ever interjected. I was just mesmerized.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how you learn. There's no doubt on that.
It was awesome. I mean, you know, the early days of NXT, Dusty, obviously, God rest his soul, was a big part of the of FCW, which eventually became NXT and the Performance Center. And, you know, again, like I've talked about the education that I've had in the business and the people I've been fortunate enough to be around. And Dusty was unbelievable. Being around Dusty and learning from him, I learned about the flow of the show, which for me as a producer is massive to learn, right? You know, Dusty taught me about, you know, look, sometimes depending on how you look, he's like, look, baby, sometimes you want to take him straight up on that rocket ship and take him from flow and take him all the way to the sky. Other times you want to take him up and then take him down and take him up and take him down. Like, listening to Dusty just like break down psychology. And like, you hear that term a lot when people talk about the business. Oh, this guy doesn't have good psychology or doesn't understand psychology. Psychology plays so much into everything that happens, from the way the TV presentation is to the selling in the ring that helps the viewer really relate and gravitate towards what they're seeing. That psychology means so much, Mark. And man, learning and sitting under Dusty's learning tree and learning all that stuff, I mean, blew me away.
I got a good Dusty story. When I first started going on the road with WCW, and even though I was only on TV for the 1 year, I was on the road for like a good 6-7 years.
You were behind the scenes for a lot of that time, right?
Well, I was doing internet stuff, internet, right. 900 number and magazine, okay? Whatever they needed me to do. And I remember the first time I traveled was to San Francisco. I was at the Cow Palace. So I'm in the lobby, and I'm going to get a ride to the Cow Palace, right? So I get a cab, and who comes out in the lobby but Dusty? So he goes, hey, baby, can I catch a ride? And I go, yeah, yeah. And I had barely introduced myself to him, like maybe the day before, right?
Yeah.
And so when I worked for the Torch, I used to criticize Dusty when he would over-push himself or push Dustin. In fact, what caused the big rift between Bill Watts and me that led to the, you know, the facts to Hank Aaron and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Was I did a parody. I did Dueling Bookers, where Bill Watts was pushing Eric and Dusty was pushing Dustin. They were trying to top each other. Like in one of the skits I wrote in this parody, I had Eric Watts crucified. And the caption read, Eric Watts rising again on the third day at an arena near you.
Jesus.
Which, of course, led Bill Watts to question my commitment to my faith, which, okay, fair play, but it kind of broke down there between me and the big cowboy. But anyway, so we're in the cab, and Dusty goes, you know, I seem to recall you beat me up pretty good in that dirt sheet back when. And I'm like to myself, oh, shit. Oh, shit. He remembers. He knows.
And you're stuck in a cab with him.
And he put his arm around me and said, don't worry about it, baby. It's no sweat. We all on the same team now. And after that, I mean, I like to think we got along great. I have nothing but respect for Dusty. And nothing but respect for him even before that. I mean, you know, you do what you do. Like, you know, I criticize people. We do on this podcast. It doesn't mean we think they're, you know, Satan incarnate or that they're bad people. It's just, you know, we're looking at the wrestling business. So,
yeah.
But
a lot of these people are friends. Yeah. A lot of these people are friends of ours, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. At least they were. But I have nothing but respect for Dusty, the whole Rhodes family. Dustin was always great to me when we worked together. And, you know, the dealings I've had with Cody, that applies too. Like, whenever I've shown up, like, at those StarCasts that Conrad does,
yeah,
Cody's always been terrific to me. So I'm a big fan and friend of the Rhodeses. And I wrote an obit when Dusty passed that I'm very proud of. You can probably check that out somewhere online. But I'll tell you, one of my favorite Dusty moments. You might have been there for this. You might have been there for this. I wrote a blog about this because it was one of my favorite Dusty moments ever. And if I'm not mistaken, it was the last time he was on WWE TV.
Is that Cody and Dustin winning the tag title, or is it the six-man tag against the Shield?
No, when they got their jobs back.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and he cut Steph off at the pass and double-crossed her.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "Do my boys have their job back or not?" And Steph goes, "Yeah." And he cuts and goes, "Okay, that's good. That's all I needed to hear. We done now."
Yeah.
And, of course, Steph got enraged, but you know what Dusty did? Dusty did what the babyface is supposed to do. Okay, and I wrote that we needed a hero who decided he wasn't going to stake the McMahon's bullshit anymore, and that's Dusty Rhodes. He's a hero.
Man, was that and, that was a great.
I loved that moment. I watched that back on YouTube more than once.
That a great storyline that just had everyone emotionally invested when Dusty and when Dustin and Cody, when they beat the Shield to win those tag titles. I'm fairly confident that the emotion in the ring between Dustin and Cody was very, very genuine when they were celebrating that win together. All good stuff. And like we said, it's the psychology that pulls you in and really engages you as a viewer and keeps you coming back, because we all just love great storytelling. Double M. Mark, before we go, like, you've got such insight. You know, and I kind of want to touch back on something that we just talked about, you know, before we told these great stories about Dream and Pillman. Do you think that the folks that are putting content out now, do you think it's just a matter of being unfamiliar with you and your work? You know, like
I've never heard mad about the Pillman thing.
No,
I gotta be honest, though. I was mad about the Flair thing too. I should have been on the 30 for 30.
Yeah, but like I've never heard of, you know, in my time in wrestling, I never heard your name brought up in a negative context with any sort of heat associated with it. So I think it might be a matter, Mark, like we talked about, right? Like, folks just maybe not necessarily appreciating the past, but maybe, like you said, like with that 1 year, do folks remember it? And what do we need to do to get you back out into the forefront? Because these
we don't need to.
These are stories that need to be told.
We just don't need to. This is enough. Hey, Mike, it took me 21 years to do this.
Fair.
You know, to do a podcast. I did some blogs for like that WrestleZone site for a while. But no, I'm perfectly content with this. I don't need to be back in wrestling or recognized by wrestling. I just don't need that. As far as why I'm not, I'm pretty sure I know why I've not been asked to be on Dark Side of the Ring.
You got hit with the Dark Side, guys?
I can just hear a certain piece of crap with a tennis racket saying, "If you get that fat fuck on this show, I won't be on your show ever fucking again."
Motherfucker.
One fucking time you get that fat fuck on this show, I guarantee it's Cornette. No question about it.
Hopefully the production team behind Dark Side listens to the show.
Well, it's too late. It's too late. I wouldn't do it now if they wanted to. The Pillman one's the only one I was truly relevant for anyway.
I'm going to make a push to get you on season 4.
The ESPN thing with the 30 for 30 for Flair.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, that was great. That was great. And I'm sure the Pillman thing for Dark Side will be as well. But the Flair thing, I talked to the producer. What was his name? Josh Karp, right?
Rory Karp.
Rory Karp. I'm sorry. Forgive me, Rory, for mangling that. But, you know, and I respect him and I like him. I don't know why he chose not to. I thought he did a great job. I've talked to him since about it. Let's not forget, I was fired by ESPN once, too. You know, back in 2008. So maybe that was part of it. But, see, the Flair thing, I didn't have Flair stories that nobody else knew. You know what I mean? That nobody else lived.
Right.
I have Flair stories that hundreds of people lived, often in the same room at the same time. The Pillman stories, I was unique. I had stuff there nobody else did, firsthand. But, you know, whatever.
Well, we'll make our own Pillman documentary, and I'm going to get those stories out of you. And
actually, let me get a plug in, if I could.
Plug away.
Before we're done here. A guy named Joe Dombrowski, who does play-by-play for the indie promotion here, IWC.
Yeah.
And who has done play-by-play for a lot of indie promotions. He should be working big-time play-by-play somewhere. He'd be better than Adnan Virk, I can tell you that.
I was just going to say.
Joe's really good. And Joe got the footage, got the rights to, along with Brian Jr. They got the footage to all the Brian Pillman memorial shows that Les Thatcher did.
Oh, awesome.
Back in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah.
So Joe's putting together a documentary about the Brian Pillman memorial shows, and I was interviewed for those. And I'm sure that's going to be great. Absolutely fantastic. So keep your eye out for that sometime this year, I would think.
Let's go. I'm all in on it. You let me know when, and I'll get eyes on it. I love that double M.
Will do.
Yeah. Well, it looks like that's all the time we've got for this week, folks. Appreciate you guys.
It was delightful, Mike. You've done terrific again.
Team effort, double M. I love the stories, man. Because look, these are all the guys and girls that I grew up watching. I was fortunate to get a chance to work with Rick. Didn't get a chance to work with Brian due to his passing, but to, you know, one of my favorites growing up. So to hear those stories, man, that's what I mark out for. And that's what I always marked out for, was learning about the history of the business and the guys that helped shape it.
At some point, the Pillman thing comes out, we can. I got so many Pillman stories that won't be on there.
Hey,
and like one other quick one. Just I'll give you the edited version.
Sure.
Brian would call my radio show. Okay, he would call it out of the clear blue sky, and he would stay on for like a half an hour, 45 minutes, just going off. And he would, like, one time he conducted an argument with his wife while he was on the show with me. He would talk to me, talk to her, talk to me, talk to her. And at one point he says on the show, "Madden, you know what my wife's like, and now your whole audience is going to find out." And I said, "I'm not sure that's a good idea."
Oh, man. You were so, look, you played marriage counselor also. That's awesome.
Yeah, hey, I'm so good at that.
Just getting the hot content for the people. Well, that does it for us for this week, boys and girls. We can't thank you enough, as always, for the support, man. It's been a long morning. Keep keeping up with us. Social media. Follow us at the BWSP to get all the info and insights on every episode, when they're going to drop. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Mr_Mansuri and Mr. Mark Madden at Mark Madden X. You got NXT, you got AEW this week, and I'm sure we'll be tweeting along as the shows go off. And pop over to the YouTube page, get the full videos, get clips of the show. Just search for The Best Wrestling Show, period, on YouTube. And hit that subscribe button while you're there, man, and just keep doing us the favor of helping us grow this show. Spread the word about The Best Wrestling Show, period, because we can't do it without you guys and girls. And we're beyond appreciative to get to this point. So until next week, where we'll dissect some more, maybe hear some more stories, and talk all things World of Wrestling. I'm Mike Mansuri. He's Mark Madden, the Archer of Infamy. We'll see you next week right here on The Best Wrestling Show, period.